Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Hi, I'm Alice Hyman, and I'm excited to be with you here on Sales Talk for CEOs with my very special guest, and you're going to learn why in just a minute, Mario Martinez, the CEO of Vengresso. Welcome, Mario.
Alice, I cannot believe that I got the privilege to be here with you. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me, my friend.
Oh my gosh. Launching this podcast, as you know, is a huge undertaking. And I wanted you to be one of my very first guests, as I had mentioned to you, because we have such a great history together and of you becoming the CEO of Vengresso. So I do want to have us share that story. So just to kind of set for everybody, you know, what we're doing here on Sales Talk for CEOs is I'm talking to CEOs about sales, their role in sales, and what they need to do to really build a sales organization that'll increase the value of their company and get them the freedom that they really want. And I think that, I know as a CEO, you probably feel the same way, Mario, that freedom is a really important thing. But I want to hear your backstory. I want you to tell everybody how you got started in sales, you know, what you were doing in sales and what you were doing right before you started this company. And then we'll get into how you built your sales organization.
You got it. So how I started in sales was actually by accident. I think I may have told you this before, but for all the listeners, I used to work at a Ritz camera centers. And for those of us that are old enough, we remember they were the little photo booth shops you used to go and bring your 35 millimeter film to. Yeah, I know any of the CEOs listening, they're like, 35 millimeter film, what's that? It was the kind of, you know, where you put the film inside and you pulled it over to your camera and you close it and you started taking pictures on it and they processed the film. And so I was actually a photo finisher, which means that I would take the little canisters of the 35 millimeter film. I'd process it. I'd put it under, you know, cyan, magenta, and yellow, and I would be printing these pictures out. So I was printing out pictures, making them look nice and sexy and pretty pictures, right, for everybody. And one day a day, I applied to transfer from our Concord store to our Berkeley store. And my regional manager, his name was Hunter Anderson, came in and he had a really interesting toupee. You could always see the bobby pins underneath the toupee. Now, I say that with the fact that the guy started my sales career. And what happened was is I applied to transfer over to the Berkeley store. And he came in, he says, Mario, I need to talk to you about your transfer. So I said, okay, no problem. So we met up and he says, I got good news and I got bad news. And I said, well, what's the bad news? I'm always the bad news type of guy first. He says, the bad news is I can't approve your transfer. And I said, what? And I said, what do you mean you can't approve my transfer? I need this job. I'm going to UC Berkeley or Cal, and I need to be able to, and by the way, right there at the mouth of the university was a Ritz Camera Centers. And so I said, I need to be able to work. I need to pay my way through college. And he says, well, hold on. He said, let me talk to you about the good news. And I said, okay, what's the good news? And he says, the good news is I'll transfer you not as a photo finisher, but as a salesperson. And I said, salesperson, what? And he says, so let me talk to you a little bit about what I'm seeing. And I said, okay. So he pulls out the book, and the book, it's all the book of sales and who are the top performers. So yeah. Here I am, a photo finisher, part-time photo finisher. And he says, for the last year plus, you have been in the top one, two, or three spots as a part-time photo finisher for sales in the whole region.
Oh, wow.
And I said, what? And he says, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know what I'm doing. And that in itself is a whole long story of what he asked me to go through in terms of teaching him what I'm doing to help people buy camera equipment. And longer story short, I tell them the story of what I'm doing, and that is how I developed the phrase, sales is the art of helping. And because Hunter said, so basically after I told him everything I was doing, he goes, basically all you're doing is helping customers. And I said, I guess that's the way you want to think about it. That's where it came from. So I got transferred over there into sales. And then I got moved into what's called our signature store in Rockridge, which was only about a 20-minute bus ride from UC Berkeley. And then from there, I ended up getting another sales and marketing job. And my mom knew a gal, a good friend of hers, who was at a software company in Concord. And at about 19 years old, I got hired into this software company doing then telemarketing, now called SDR, BDR work. And after 6 months, my leads that I was handing off to the team were turning into opportunities. So they offered me a role to come on as a junior account executive. And I did that. And then next thing you know, by the age of 20, I'm making six figures. And then 21, I said, who needs this college thing? I'm making bank on this. So anyway, so that's how I got started in sales. Hunter Anderson realized that there was a hidden talent. He refused to transfer me as a photo finisher, but transferred me over as a salesperson to the Berkeley store. And unbeknownst to me, I had this hidden talent.
I love this story. And I knew a little bit about it, but I had never heard that whole story. That is fantastic. I love that you were just helping people and they bought things. And I think for everybody out there, especially if you've never sold, sometimes you have this impression of what sales is, that it's manipulative or pushy or some sort of trickery or something like that. I want you to take all of that out of your mind, because sales is a helping profession. That's what I love about it. And as you know, Mario, I was a public school teacher before I went into sales, and I believe the same skills apply, and it is still a helping profession. And I love that I get to help people every single day do what they need to do, meet their goals, remove roadblocks and challenges. I can't think of anything better, right? And that's what you got to do. You were doing it. You didn't know it was sales.
I didn't know it was sales. And to this day, anybody that asks me what is sales, in fact, there's a movie called The Story of Sales that was produced by Salesforce.
Right. I remember that. Yes.
And I had the unique privilege of being one of 20 sales influencers invited to be part of the movie. And they asked me that question. They said, what is sales? Define sales. And that's my line. Sales is the art of helping. And that was actually used by Benioff when he introduced 3 years ago, or 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I forget what it was. The whole COVID thing is like,
I know over. Now it's like a time warp. Like it didn't happen. So it's like add a year to whatever you think it was, just add a year.
So it's 3 years ago. So he introduced that at the Sales Club keynote, which was my picture. And it was so awesome because I was there at Dreamforce and I was not there during the keynote. I was out and about, I forget what I was doing, but I started getting text messages from people that knew me. They're like, oh my God, dude, you're on stage. And I was like, what? So yeah. So sales is the art of helping. And I think for a lot of founders and CEOs that are especially listening to this particular program, there are some who know how to sell. And there are some who don't have a sales background and who are the technical leader, if you would, and now the CEO of your company. If you put it in that context, that sales is the art of helping. That's it. That's all we're doing is helping people. And we're facilitating solving a problem. Then now we're just focused on really sales is human to human, human to human engagement. That's it. That's as easy as it is. And if we understand that, then we can explode our sales.
100%. And that's what makes it easier to get your whole company involved in sales and engaged with the customer. When you, as the CEO, have the understanding and the vision that sales is helping. And that is how we grow, by helping our customers grow. And then people in your company who are in departments who think, oh, I'm not in sales, start to understand that they truly are in sales, because they are part of that helping that goes on. And without them, the customer won't be successful. So I love that sales is the art. Did you say it again? How do you say it? Sales is the art of helping. Helping, the art of helping. So wonderful. So you were an accidental salesperson.
I was.
And are you also an accidental entrepreneur? I mean, here you are in this sales career making bank. Were you thinking, oh, someday I'm just going to own my own company and do this?
So interestingly enough, you know, I'm a very big planner, and I had for every almost other than the last like 4 years, I don't know why I stopped. I probably should get back to this, but every well,
you got real busy with Van Grosso.
And that's exactly right. I got busy all of a sudden being a CEO of a company. So every year of my career, I map out at the beginning of every year, I map out exactly what I want to do. And I'm a plan A, plan B type of guy. I always have a plan A. This is, you know, where I'm at. And then I've got a plan B, which I'm totally okay with and totally happy with. And so throughout all my entire corporate career, I've always had these dreams and aspirations to become a chief sales officer or chief revenue officer of an organization. That was in my whiteboard plan. Every single year I had that inside there. And then later on in my career, I ended up saying, you know, I would love to be on the speaking circuit. I'd love to be a keynote speaker that's motivating people, right?
Yeah.
And to understand my story and my story of struggle, because there was a lot, there was a whole story of struggle that goes behind the Ritz Camera Center job there. And so I have both those two paths inside there. Yeah. And funny as it may be, I'm now doing both of them, right? So now I do both of them. And who would have known that that would have happened? But I was an accidental entrepreneur and accidental CEO. And what happened was, as my last stop in corporate was a VP of sales of a software collaboration company. And I had launched a digital sales training program to our 350 sellers internationally and domestically and internationally. And that program was uber successful, to the point that LinkedIn, one of the world's largest social media companies, asked me to speak at their annual users conference.
I remember this.
And that was in October of 2015. And, you know, those of you can't see me, I have my arm, you know, straight out as a vertical line. If brand equity, Alice, looked like this as a straight line, nobody knew who I was, very few people, right? But after I was done speaking on stage to thousands of their customers for 48 minutes, which I went 3 minutes over because of the Q&A, by the way, that was really cool. And LinkedIn was like, get them off. And I'm like, well, the questions keep coming. The brand equity line went, did a vertical, I said horizontal. Horizontal line.
Vertical. Shot up. Yeah, it shot up.
No joke. Within 1 hour of speaking, I received an email from a Fortune 84 CEO who invited me to come down to the corporate headquarters to meet with them and their lead team to talk about how to launch a digital selling program. And 3 months later, I picked up the phone and called you. And that was in January of 2016.
And I remember. It was so great.
I was actually in Hawaii. And I was toying around with this idea of going out on my own. And I remember I said, I need to find an entrepreneur, a business owner who can tell me, like, knock me back into my seat, you know, get me ready, like help me with making this decision. Because within 3 months, all of a sudden opportunities started coming up and I started getting a lot of phone calls and I had the choice. I can go back to being a corporate VP, which was awesome. It's a great job. It's a wonderful living. Mm-hmm. Or I could go and start my own company. And so I called you up, Alice Hyman, and I said, Alice, I need some advice. I'm toying around with this idea of going out on my own and started my own company. And you said, oh, great. Oh, this is right up my alley. And I said, great. So what should I be thinking about? How should I be approaching this? What are my, you know, what are the things that I should be doing or thinking or saying? And you said, okay, I've got two questions for you. That's it. There's two questions. And based upon your answers to these two questions, we'll tell you whether or not you are eligible and or qualified to be a CEO of your own company.
Not what you thought I was going to say either, was it?
No, but I was ready for them. So the first question came to me was, you said, okay, first question, do you have enough money in your bank account?
Yes.
That would sustain your current lifestyle for at least the next year? And I said, yeah. And you said, that doesn't sound very like you're very sure of that. And I said, no, I'm just thinking through. I said, you know, I probably want to make a slight cut here or there. I definitely have it, you know, at least 9 months, maybe 10.
But I said something like, if you spend every last dime that you have over the year, how is your wife going to feel about
that? Well, that's hold on. You're jumping ahead. You're jumping ahead. That's you're coming to question number two here. So I said, yeah, I think I got it. And you're like, you're not very sure. I said, no, I just have to make a few cuts here and there and I should be just fine for at least a year. And you said, fantastic. And then you said, okay, well then if that's the case, you pass question number one, you're halfway there. You're 50% of the way there on, yes, you're eligible to be an entrepreneur and start a business. And so I said, okay, well, what's question number two? And you're like, question number two, you ready for it? I said, yes. And you said, are you willing to risk it all? And I said, I think I am. No, I am, but I'm not sure if my wife is. And you said, oh, sorry, hold on. I said there was only two questions. There's actually now three based upon your answer. So let me ask you this third question. Do you want to remain married?
I did ask you that. I did say, do you plan on staying married?
Yeah, do you plan on staying married? And I said, well, yeah. And you said, well, then in that case, based upon your answers, you're not eligible to be an entrepreneur. And then I said, wait, there's more. And you said, well, what more is there? And I said, well, I'm sitting on two contracts that have just been signed. And one of them is from Cisco. One of them was from HP. And they will fund the company from here until the next, whatever it was, 6 months. And you said, oh my God, well, why didn't you just start with that in the first place? That would have made this a whole lot easier discussion. But it was really those questions that I thought about, right? Do you have enough money to sustain your lifestyle for the next year? Are you willing to risk it all? And then when I said, I am, but I'm not sure if my wife would be, it was the third question was, do you want to remain married? And of course, yes, I am still married to my wife. And so that was interesting because it helped me really rethink, like, what was I walking into? I was going from a really extremely nice income to basically 100% commission role. Right. That's essentially what it was, 100% commission role. And as long as I could think of it that way and I can understand the risks, then I would be eligible. And that's how I started the company was after talking to you, I hung up the phone, I told my wife the answers to the question. And then I said, yes, I think we're ready. Do you agree? And she was like, I'll support you. But you know, this is, and I said, okay, we can do this. And that's how I started my first company, which was M3 Junior Growth Strategies, which was later acquired and merged underneath Vengresso. And that was 4 years ago.
Yes. Amazing. And so now 4 years in, right? So when you started, who was doing all the sales, Mario?
So a good question. So when we started, all the partners, we started out with 7 partners in the firm. We now have 4 partners left in the firm. And all the partners were responsible for doing all the selling directly and finding business and, you know, getting out there and doing it. And some people are sellers and some people were not sellers. But at the end of the day, we all had to sell and bring in money to the company. And so that's what the original plan was. And then, of course, as we've grown, I still today very much am selling. In fact, I'm proud to say, Alice, that I just closed for the company a couple months ago, our company's largest contract in company history. That was me. I was selling that. So, I still haven't got off the selling track, but right. I do have a whole team of sellers. There's about 5 sellers in the organization now that we've scaled up, and I train and mentor a heck of a lot more than I am doing direct selling.
Well, good. So I think that as you recognize, the role of the CEO in sales changes over time. When you first start, you're going to do a lot more of the selling. You may be 5, 10, 20 years in. Hopefully you're not doing the selling, but you still have a role in sales. And you just started to mention that. So you were doing the sales. You still do some sales. But how did you decide it's time to start building a sales team? And how did your role shift as you started doing that?
So here's my perspective. First off, as a CEO of any size company, small or large, you will always be selling.
That's right.
You're always going to be selling, no matter what. Now, to what degree of all the different details, you know, at the top of the funnel generation, lead generation, through the middle of the funnel, through the end of the funnel, you know, where you might be sitting at is a totally different story as you mature in the business. But for me, I thrive off of doing top of funnel. Like, I love to be able to find those leads, referrals, and ask people and meet people and network and then hand them off to our sales team and then get back in at the bottom of the funnel.
And I want to pause right there for a second because I think for even for CEOs who don't need to be as involved in sales or maybe don't want to, the one key thing they could do is be an evangelist online for their own company as a lead generator. And it's easy. It's fun. You just get to meet people and talk to people and talk about cool things, right? And build leads for everybody else in the company. So, you know, that's something like, why wouldn't you do that, right? So you still do that. And I know for you, Mario, you always will do that. All right. Yeah. So you're still doing that. And then you decided, okay, we're going to build a sales team here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in order to scale yourself, here's the thing. As a CEO, you realize that you need to scale yourself in order to be able to grow the company. One second. I got a cough. Sorry about that. Had a cough there.
No worries.
So in order to be able to grow the company, you have to have either a partner that you know is going to handle sales and is responsible for that. So another owner of the company. You either hire a sales leader or you begin to build a sales team that has a sales leader that can now be responsible for really helping to generate top of the funnel and then move things all the way through to the bottom of the funnel, i.e. close. And so in order for us to hit our goals, and I'm a very goal-oriented individual. So with that in mind, you know, look, we had a goal and objective to be able to hit $5 million run rate in the organization in a certain period of time. So to do that, I knew that I had to scale me. So I came up with this idea, and it was actually not a new idea. It was really based upon what other companies were doing. And that is, if you looked at finding a salesperson, you have two different ways that you can do that. You can go out and hire somebody, bring them on board. You can go work with an outsourcing organization that will help do SDR-related work or even account executive-related work. Or you are just comfortable doing your own thing and you continue to do all the sales, but you may not necessarily be able to scale things up. Or the fourth option is you have a product or a service that is purely online and you nail the whole online e-commerce transaction modeling. Right. So for me, we're a professional services training organization. We teach salespeople and business owners and entrepreneurs how to be able to prospect better and sell more. So the e-commerce side is it kind of, but it requires a conversation. People want to know, right? So I knew I had to scale myself. So when I looked at the models and I said, look, there's all these different companies that I can outsource my sales to. Some of them are domestic US, but many of them have folks that are overseas that speak English and they do really, really well. So I said, well, I'm going to take a page out of the outsourcing companies who do overseas work and they sell to domestic US companies, small or large, but all of their people are overseas. There's obviously a reason why they do that. There's obviously a reason why companies like Twilio, HubSpot, and some of the other major companies that are out there like LinkedIn have development firms for software in Poland, Uruguay, Brazil, Colombia. Yes. And I said, I should just take a play out of that playbook. And I did. And I looked at that and I said, I'm going to go build my sales organization and I'm going to go find those native English speakers, hire them to be part of my company, train them like no one else has ever trained them before, because usually in these foreign markets, they're only going to be able to do like SDR level work and maybe some account executive, but never work on big, large accounts, right? So I'm going to give them something that they likely won't have the opportunity to have. And if I look at this, a minimum compensation package for an SDR, brand new, out of college, in the middle of the country, U.S., United States, central U.S., Ohio, as an example, I'm paying $50,000 to $60,000 a year for an SDR. Now, if you move that to New York or to San Francisco, the East Coast or West Coast, you're paying minimum $75,000, $80,000 a year, and it scales up from that. That is just too costly for a small business company.
When you're growing at the beginning, yes.
If I outsourced it, I would probably be paying anywhere between $4,000 to $6,000 a month. And that's usually cheaper than having a, you know, $60,000 a year employee. I don't have to pay the taxes, those types of things. I just work directly with the outsourcer, but I don't get to control the experience, right? So I said, well, this is dumb. I'm just going to go build my own model. And I looked for an individual who knew the international markets. I found that person who can help me grow and scale. His name is Jack Wells. He's one of our VPs today. Amazing individual. Love the guy to death. He'll never leave Ingresso, so don't try to recruit him. But with that said, he had actually done this for BPOs, large-scale BPOs, and done this in the Colombia market. And I hired him to oversee all of our positions. And I started targeting, I had a a personal passion. Obviously, my last name is Martinez, so I'm obviously Hispanic. And with that in mind, if I could hire an all Hispanic company, I would absolutely do that. And so I worked with Jack and we developed a strategy and we started targeting all of South America and Central America to be able to hire somebody on. And the cost differential was just incomparable, right? I could hire somebody with an amazing, great income out of Colombia for a couple $1,000s a month. They live like kings as a result of that type of salary. And I save $40,000 a year in comparison to what I would pay somebody here in the domestic US.
And you're teaching them amazing skills that they may not otherwise be able to get.
That's exactly right.
Win, 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 win.
Total win. The big downside is that I don't have an office presence. So you had to find somebody who doesn't mind working 100% remote and can get their feel being close to you through virtual, right? And we made a decision early on. We, Vingresa, would never have any real estate whatsoever, right? It was 100% virtual company. So we needed to find somebody of that mindset. And we built out a whole model of how to hire folks. In fact, if you were to go to Google and you type in the word remote selling into Google, I think Vingresa's article is number 3 or number 4.
And I've shared that article with many people. I highly recommend, and I will put it in the show notes too, because it's a great article. And what's funny is it has nothing to do with what you actually sell, which is what I love and always tell people. Just provide great content and it will draw the right people to you. And so I will put that in the show notes. All right. So you've got this amazing way to hire these people now.
Yeah. And in that article is a whole section on how to hire a remote seller. And we give you our whole playbook. We give you our scripts. We give you even the panel evaluation criteria that we use for doing a panel. And we've got a video that you can watch inside there of one of our sellers who showed up. So I said, well, if I can do this for sellers, why can't I do it for marketers, customer success, support, and just about any other role that I want to find? And as a matter of fact, that's what I did. And so when I talk to investors today, they now see, whoa, you've been able to leverage the international market from Eastern Europe to India to South America, to Central America. You've been able to leverage this entire community of skilled workers, treat them amazingly well, give them great compensation that's good for their local market, and benefit the company to grow and accelerate. You've got a really interesting model. And it's a model that most investors are looking at. They know that it works on the software development side, but had not seen before it being used on these other avenues. And so basically, now with the whole pandemic, look at companies like Google and Facebook. They're telling all their employees, I don't care where you live.
Right.
You can live anywhere you want in the world as long as you can do your job. And that's what now really COVID in a beneficial type of way has created for us as small business owners is to be able to hire anyone we want at, all over the world. And that is how I built my sales team. But it does require, it's not a plug and play. It's not a cookie cutter, you know. The level of effort that I put into our sellers is the same exact level of effort that I'd put into a domestic seller as well. Nothing changes. There is nothing easy. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I'll just hire some great SDRs. No, it requires constant work, constant attention. I just got an IM this morning from one of our sellers who says, I'm meeting with someone. And the total opportunity is one of our training programs, which is $397 a month. A year, Alice. $397. And they said, what do you think about this? And there was an issue. How can I overcome this? Okay, it's $397. Right. We're closing, you know, multi-million dollar on the enterprise. It requires that you put in effort for these folks who want to work really, really hard and do really, really well. So nothing is easy. There is no magic pill. There is no silver bullet. It is hard work. And no matter what way you go, whether it's domestic or international, you still have to train your sales team. You have to dedicate time to your sales team. You have to be with them in the field. You have to join their sales calls. You have to teach them through osmosis to be able to make a program get started and be successful.
Right. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I love what you've done. And as a CEO, you don't have to be the person or the only person that is doing all of this training and nurturing of your sales team, but you have to ensure that someone's doing, because what I see too much, Mario, is a CEO who leaves that up to someone else. And then we have a sales team that right now, they're not modern sellers. They don't really understand the buyer or what's happening in the marketplace right now. And then, you know, the company's not hitting their goals, right? So you can't let go of it. Even when you hire someone else to run it, you might have a sales enablement team, a sales training team, sales managers. The CEO still has to oversee it, share the vision, and make sure the values are coming through, because there's nothing worse. And I know you know this feeling as a CEO, as seeing something that a salesperson did, something that they sent, something that they posted that does not live up to the values of your company, or is disappointing in some way, or doesn't make you proud, right?
Yeah.
So the CEO ultimately takes that responsibility when a salesperson shows up in a way to our customers and prospects that isn't, you know, isn't what's going to make us proud.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to think of raising salespeople as raising children. When we have children, we start out with baby phase. Baby phase, they're totally dependent upon you. They will die without the loving, tender care of a parent. Feeding them, cleaning them, bathing them, wiping their face, cleaning the snot out of their nose, right? That's babyhood. There is that phase with a brand new seller. You have babyhood. Then you go from babyhood to childhood. And in that childhood phase, you're learning the do's and the don'ts, the, you know, how to control what you do, what you don't do, what's right, what's wrong. And you're in that phase. Then you go into preteen phase. In the preteen phase, you think you begin to know everything. And you're starting to wonder, like, I already know this. I got this. And you're still having to help them and coach them and train them with the idea that, look, you've got some really advanced skills, but I need to refine those skills. Now you enter teenagehood. In teenagehood, everybody knows everything. It's very difficult to be able to tell them anything and without them getting upset about it and without them saying you're controlling. That's okay too. You have that with, you know, with salespeople as well. They get to the point now where they can operate on their own, but they need course correction still. And that course correction is critical in terms of you being involved. And eventually they get out of teenagehood and they move into adulthood. And at that point in time, now you're there as a friend for your child at 21, 20 plus years old. You're trying to coach them where you think they may need coaching, but sometimes they won't listen and they don't have to listen. And so that's the same thing with our salespeople as well. We get to the point where we've done all of this from babyhood, wipe the snot out of their nose, help them feed themselves and eat. Then you teach them how to get dressed, how to potty train. You do all these things until they get to the point where now they're ready to sell on their own, and they're making mistakes and they're listening back to the things that they've done and they're coaching themselves up. And then they come to you for fatherly advice or motherly advice, whichever role you serve. And it is no different than if you think of a salesperson. That evolution, instead of it happening over 21 years with a child, it really happens over the course of 2 years with a salesperson. Yes. And that 2 years, you've got to invest in them. And you hope and pray that they don't turn around and leave you within 2 years, because you've invested so much time into that individual and growing and developing them. But it is a really short period, and it happens really, really fast, all those different stages. And as a CEO, you have to be attached to every one of those stages for the betterment of your business and for the betterment of the sales efforts.
Right. And even when there's sales enablers in place, sales training people in place, managers, marketing people, all of that, it's still your job to oversee it and make sure it all works beautifully. And I love that. So we've just got a few minutes left. What's the future of sales for Vingresso? You've grown this sales team. How many salespeople do you have now?
So 5.25. The 0.25 is me. We will be adding on another region in the near future to the organization. So we'll get up to at least about 6 folks. And our pairing system is a little unique. We have basically a territory owner, so we call them an RVP. And then we have one direct report, and that is what we call the MDM, the Market Development Manager. And the MDM is really responsible for doing all those SDR and BDR activities. But we also give them the full sales cycle experience of learning to open and close in that SMB segment. So we're taking a lot of the sellers that only internationally only have the ability to get to that SDR level, and we're giving them that AE level experience. And as they excel there, they can move into that mid-market and enterprise, which we've just promoted our first international MDM into a full sales manager role, and he's doing quite well out of the gate. So I'm very excited to see that, and that's been about a year and a half long process as well.
So 5 years from now?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Yeah, back to your question. Where do we put that? The reality is from a Vangresso standpoint, our mission and goal is to help over 100,000 businesses to prospect better and sell more. However, what I will see happening with what I do see happening with Vangresso is that within 2 years, actually, we will become a sales technology company, less a training company, and we'll utilize technology to facilitate creating more sales conversations. And that's one of the things that we've recently launched with our flymessage.io tool.
Yes.
It is amazing. It is awesome. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the chief product developer of that particular product. But
I'll put that in the show notes too, because I love FlyMessage.
And the productivity that you gain out of that, it is pretty awesome. And what we're seeing to scale and what people are asking for is exactly what we predicted the market would ask. So for us, we'll become a sales technology company with sales training as a key element to help a seller do the right things with the tool and the technology. So that is critical to a salesperson. A CEO is making sure that you've got the skill mapped to the technology, because Alice, a fool with the tool is still a fool.
A fool. And so will you need more salespeople or less salespeople as you, you know, pivot into this?
More. Yeah, we'll continue to grow. The key thought here is make sure that the marketing can support the growth of the sales team. So I think I've got a pretty good command of, you know, where marketing's at today, how many leads are we producing, what does our growth curve look like, and I'm trying to map that to the growth of the sales team. But our onboarding process, as much as I hate to say it, and I think we've got an amazing sales enablement process, it's about a 6-month average onboarding time.
Yeah.
And I cannot, for the life of me, shorten that cycle.
No,
I have tried everything in my power to shorten it, and it's just not happening.
No, that's, I mean, for the best companies in the world that I see and that I work with, that is right. It takes 6 months, because you can't just throw them in there and expect them to know what to do. You really need to nurture them and onboard them for 6 full months and then go through the other stages that you described to get them fully operational and out there selling, helping in the way that would make you proud. So, gosh, Mario, this has been amazing. So many great things. I know we could go on, and I'll probably have you back because I want to share with the CEO some specific things that you and I love to talk about that will be so, so helpful to them. So thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Any parting words, if you were to just leave the CEOs with one thing that they should definitely do if they really want to have a top-notch sales organization?
Just remember, instill inside of your sales team and yourself the sales is the art of helping. So just keep going back to that. Are we helping them? What problem are we solving? What's the business problem that we're solving? How are we helping them? How are we going to prove out that we're helping it to them? If you can focus everything around that, then you'll do really, really well, in my opinion.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Mario. And I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Alice.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.